Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Morning guys, Russ here, and I've got some exciting news for you all. Support for All Over Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below the waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below the waist grooming needs. Get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped has just launched in the UK, and men have gone for years and years and years without having the right tools for the job. You can be one of the first men in the UK to experience their life-changing products. I know over the years I've struggled many times with personal grooming, shaving, creams, cutting yourself, all that sort of stuff. But none of that is a problem with the Manscaped redesigned electric trimmer. It features a cutting ceramic edge blade to reduce grooming accidents, 7,000 RPM motor which enables it to work seamlessly through even the thickest of hair. So, go get rid of that bush, make it clean and tidy, and get 20% off and free delivery with the code MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free delivery with MALLOVER20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will definitely thank you. Now it's time for Brian Habana.
Hi there, I'm Brian Habana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Codpast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast. The only rugby podcast gives you all the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast. We are More Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Apple Pods, at the Google Store, and lots of other podcatcher-type areas. This week, I am joined by Housewives' favourite, Phil Farnvett. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you, Russell.
Good man. Nicest guy in Cornish Rugby Podcasting, Ben Eustace.
Good, thanks.
And taking the place of our usual resident curmudgeon, no lensman this week. He is currently very cleanly shaven balls deep in a Pro 14 match. this week, we're joined by Welsh fan and Bristol Bear, Ryan Keyshaw. How you doing, Ryan?
Great, thanks, guys. It's so nice to be back on. And it was only October that we were all sat down, fully compliant, I might add, in a pub in Cornwall, and having a great meal, you know, just shooting the breeze. It was great.
I know. Yeah, October. That seems like, well, it seems like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, Ryan, obviously, it's great to have you back on. And at the time when I first spoke to you about coming on again in the near future, Wales were right in line for a grand slam. how did that turn out for you?
Do you know what? I think I'm going to be really philosophical here. I think Wales rode their luck And I'm going to say that. I woke up not excited on Saturday. And my wife was like, but it's a Grand Slam. Why aren't you excited? And I was like, it just doesn't feel like it does in like all the other times. And there's been quite a few. So I grew up, obviously, never seeing one until 2005. And then we've kind of been a bit spoiled by them. But this time it was, it's so weird with COVID and everything. But also there's luck here. Look, there was luck that we beat Ireland. I still can't believe that. Scotland. Okay. I'm not even going to go into the England debate because we're opening a can of worms, but let's just say I think Wales were the better team on the day. And then the France game, I think we were the better team and then we lost it for a bit of luck.
Before we go too far into it, Ryan, where are you from originally?
I come from actually the same kind of place as Russ. Very close, aren't we, Russ?
So yeah. What, Western Super Wales?
Yeah, when you're down there in Bristol, it's like being Scottish in Carlisle, or it's one of those border places where at school we used to play English versus Welsh to pick sides and things. So
I'm from Somerset as well. I know about all
you. You're from Street. You're just from a posh Millfield boy. So
I'm not from Street. I am not from Street. I'm from Wales.
You're from the Clark's Village. You know?
I'm from in between Wales and Glastonbury.
You're like hot fuzz country, yeah?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point was, you don't sound very Welsh. You're not from Wales. You didn't go to school in Wales. Why do you support Wales?
Well, if it's all right for Hadley Parks, it's all right for me.
Yeah, it's not all right for me. I'm fed up with these fucking English people born in England, raised in England, spend their life in England, but support somebody else just to be obnoxious pricks. I'm fed up with it.
Oh, wow. Oh. I mean,
and you're taking the brunt here. You're taking the brunt here, Ryan, of a lot of people I know who've spent their entire lives in England supporting some other team just to be fools.
Wait. I at school in the 90s, we were shit, and I used to get rinsed every week, and I stood by it. It's like, I feel like this is with all my teams. Bristol, stood by them completely. I never supported Bath. I never went to Gloucester. I never, you know, like you, supported Exeter when it became trendy, when they started winning things. I've always stood by Bristol.
I started supporting them when I moved to Cornwall. It was purely geographical. Yeah, but no, that's fair.
I hope you're going to switch to the Pirates.
If they get in the Premiership, yeah, sure.
Why not? Why not when they get the new stadium in Truro? You can go down
Yeah,
there.
No. Yeah. It'll probably be the first place I pay to go and watch a game of rugby will be the Pirates. Yeah. Just agreed. If nothing else, because of accessibility.
I'd love to see the Pirates.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to come down and we could all go out and watch the Pirates play, even if it is in the Championship. I've seen them play at Ashton Gate, but what a great night out that would be.
We get the train down, that'd be cool.
So I'll apologise partially, Ryan. You're taking the brunt for a lot of other people, but I'm just fed up with people. Like, there's guys in the Newquay Hornets Facebook Messenger group who like rave about supporting Wales, and they've never been outside of Cornwall, and they're just I'm not having it.
So one of the best rugby days of my life, non-playing, was 2013, and my wife was working at Royal Bank of Scotland at the time, and they had this competition to go present the Man of the Match award, because it was Man of the Match then, wasn't Player of the Match, and everyone filled in the form, and they've obviously thought, oh, this could get messy, let's pick the woman from legal who's not, you know, going to behave and not go crazy. And I went there thinking, oh, this is going to be awful, England are going to win, because if you remember, it was the one where Stuart Lancaster was there and Rob Shaw, and all they needed to do was not lose by 9 points. Yeah. Wales go on and do a stonker, and she went on and put it on Justin Tipperick, and that was just an amazing day.
Alex Cup, that was Alex Cup day, wasn't it?
It's so nice actually when you see, you've only seen glimpses this season, I know you're both Exeter fans, Russ and Phil, when you see him just score a try, I'll get that glimpse back, but yeah. You know,
he's shown flashes for Exeter, but he's just too injury prone, you know, he's had far too much time out injured, unfortunately.
But what did you guys think of the Wales performance, though? I know we've not talked about that, but like the actual game.
You summed it up perfectly, Ryan. They were disjointed against Ireland and scraped through. They were a bit better against Scotland, but ultimately pretty lucky in the way it finished. They played reasonably well against England. They were the better side against England. I'm not doubting that, but I wouldn't say they played particularly well. They played better than they had done. And that progression continued. And against France, it was the best game that they've played by a country mile. But yeah. Equally, France... I mean, there's been two games in the Six Nations that I've got to the end of and gone, you know what, I don't really care who wins here because they're good games of rugby. And that was France-England and France-Wales.
Oh, no. I definitely cared about the end result of France-Wales.
I can't say I've thought much about the game because I've been too busy laughing since about 5 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, for about 30 seconds towards the end, I didn't really care who won because it was a great game. But I'm glad France won.
So here's the thing, right? We mentioned, so we knew what we were going to get from France this tournament, and we've absolutely got it. Other than that last 20 minutes against England, where they had lots of opportunity when England sort of started to fail in discipline, France have looked absolutely imperious, and they did the same, you know, early doors against Wales. That opening 15 minutes where they were going try for try, which it wasn't bad defence. It was just superb rugby, great play all the way around. And I was thinking, well, this is going to be an absolute humdinger. What I found with Wales is that they seem to have stumbled across something that has now finally started to work. They started the Six Nations with Johnny Williams and Nick Tompkins in the centre. Right? If those two hadn't got injured, I wonder where Wales would be now. Because I'm not convinced that Pivac would have bought in Jonathan Davis and put George North at 13 had he had Williams and Tompkins and Watkin and, you know, would Halaholo have been given a chance off the bench? Because I think he's been very good. Would he have done that had he had the people that were available earlier in the competition? And, you know, it's hard to answer that question. However, George North at 13, and I had written George North off a little while ago as a winger, especially because his performances for quite some time now have been well below the expected level of what George North set himself over the last 10 years. You know, for the last 3 years, say, he's been nowhere near that level. You know, it was last year at Northampton and then when he moved off, it's just not been good enough. And what I've seen from George North this tournament at 13, whilst there have been some potential defensive frailties in getting squared up a bit too easily when the ball goes wide early, having Josh Adams and Louis Rees-Sammet outside him, that absolute gas enables him to defend in that way and kind of navigate, kind of, I say circumnavigate, it's kind of... appeases his defence is the fact that they are so quick and they are able to recover. And that has been a real, real positive, and as well as a return to form of Jonathan Davis, who I think has been, you know, has been fantastic. And rather than having that big ball carrier at 12 that they've seemed to have stuck by through the Gatland years, you know, your Parks and your Roberts and your one out Gatland ball, having Jonathan Davis and George Ford out there, George North out there has been a real revelation for Wales. Phil, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, so you're right. But I think there's two real keys to making that work. And the first is the fact that Dan Biggar is such an intelligent fly half. Now, for me, I know we're going to do a bit of Lions chat later, but for me, he's my Lions starting 10. But what he has brought that allows that to work is distribution. It's the ability to get the ball to the players that need to get the ball. The other thing, because you've got both, in particular North, but Davis to some degree as well, aren't always the best distributors of the ball. They're massively talented rugby players, but George North in particular is a pretty poor distributor at times. you've got both Rhys Zammit and Adams coming infield 15, 20 yards looking for the ball and being good, strong, heavy, but also lightning quick runners in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
And teams just don't expect that. They don't expect a quick, hard running winger to be hitting that kind of in between 12 and 13 channel.
Well, what Wales did, and I thought they utilised it fantastically against France, was bringing both Rhys Zammit and Adams off the wing on the inside crash ball and the outside crash ball direct off 9 and 10. So it would be almost the blind side winger getting involved in those early stages. And Louis Rhys Zammit, and I think I said this earlier on in the tournament, physically, obviously he's growing up and he's getting bigger and he's playing a lot more rugby at this level. But if you look at a picture of Louis Rhys Zammit from this time last year, he looks like a boy. Now he looks like he's probably put on, you know, maybe 5 or 6, maybe even 10 kilos, and he is still as quick, but he seems and looks a lot stronger, right?
I think somebody needs to look into the supplements they're using at Gloucester, because Ollie Thorley's done the same as well.
Yeah. What are you saying?
That they've got some special mix in their protein shakes. They've cracked the code.
Well, they're depending on little boys, aren't they? Well, I know we're not talking about Prem here, but they literally have brought out the academy side, haven't they, and just given them a run around. But that's just because there's no relegation anymore. But so you might just see all these monsters next season.
What do you make of that Wales backline, Ryan? And you know how it's evolved throughout the tournament.
Yeah, look. Sorry, I just did a Lawrence Dallaglio there, didn't I? Yeah, look.
Listen, somebody asked a question. Listen.
It's a real tough one. With Wales, this always reminds me of, and Phil made a really good point, and so did Russ, about stumbling upon a back line. It all goes back. Do you remember the 2003 game where Wales played New Zealand and ran them close and totally thrilled them? And then you had Alfie at fullback, which he'd never played before. You had Shane Williams on the wing, dazzling, and you had young players all around. And then it was suddenly like, oh, these players can play. You're right. They've been forced to go into that, but then they've adapted. And I think that is Wayne Pivak's way of doing things. I think we possibly might not see Lee Halfpenny again. You know, I think that might be the case because he's come up short. I think what's going to happen when Gareth Anscombe comes back now? Because you've got a different type of player with Callum Sheedy on the bench. And I know I'm a bit biased, but you have got that person who has
stepped
up.
Sheedy's exceptional. Like, he's been Wales's find of the tournament. Like, people talk about Rhys Zammit. Like, Callum Sheedy is the one that has, I think, probably surprised everybody the most. When he came on against England, like, personally, when Bigger went off after 50 minutes or whatever it was, I was rubbing my hands together thinking, oh, fantastic. That's a real bonus for England. And Sheedy just ran the show from there. And he did. And he did similar. You know, he had a similar type of game when he came on against France, I thought.
Yeah, it's for Callum, it's tough, really, because I don't think he's used to coming on now, because he's always started for Bristol, and Pat's kind of built the team around him and his decision making and stuff. So that's a tough one for him to come on and prove his worth. I think you've also got a problem with scrum half at Wales, where you don't know who your number one scrum half is now. You've got people like Rhys Webb, who I know he's injured now, but he can't even get in the squad.
It's Thomas Williams.
Well, is it though?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. What about Kieran Hardy?
Kieran Hardy didn't have a bad game against England.
Yeah.
Hardy was fantastic. He was really good. But to me, if I'm Wayne Pivak, I'm starting Williams if he's fit.
Who would you have on the bench then? Gareth Davies? Just because he's something different and more physical?
And more experienced in it, probably, yeah.
Good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah. Ben, have you got any thoughts on Wales?
My thoughts on Wales is... that they, I was going to make a bad joke, but I'm not going to. When they win the first three games, then they're extremely dangerous. And this time, like Ryan said, it was partly with a bit of luck. But I think once they get the momentum behind them, they're almost impossible to stop. And I think every Grand Slam they've had, they've kind of started from a not fancy position, but as they've sort of picked up momentum. They don't seem to do, England seem to be like a pendulum. They'll play well, but then they'll regress. And if you catch them on a forward swing, they're really dangerous. But then the next game, they could be, you could catch them on the backswing and they don't look very good anymore. Whereas once Wales get some confidence behind them, it's like a boulder going downhill. And because I genuinely thought when France scored after about 3 minutes that it was going to be an absolute blowout. I thought France were going to put 30 or 40 points on them. But they came straight back because they had the belief to do so. So whether it's a matter of they got the selection right or if it's just more a sort of mentality thing, they did really well to be within 4 or 5 minutes of winning the Grand Slam. I think we've talked a lot about their backs, but their back row is just exceptional as well. And I don't know. I was talking yesterday. I think with this tournament, it seems to be with almost all the teams except England that they're big players that have been off the boil through perhaps injury for a few years have really come back. So people like Davis and North and Faletau for Wales and Henshaw and Furlong for Ireland, they've really hit their straps and that's made those teams more competitive, whether that's because it's a Lions year or whether it's just that they've been lightly run because of the virus and they've got over their injuries. I don't know. Gone off at a tangent a little bit there. I think with Wales, their big players have come back to the party. Your Faletaus and Davis and North. So I think that helps as well.
And I suppose that's probably the third point on the backline issue is the fact that, George North might not entirely know how to defend perfectly at 13, but other than off first phase ball, Wales have got a phenomenally mobile, active back row, which kind of makes it a bit easier if you've got players playing slightly out of position, I would say. And to be fair, I've been critic's probably a fairly strong word, but I've been a critic of Alan Wynne-Jones in that I don't wank him off as much as everybody else. But he put in a reasonable amount of work on Saturday and impressed me.
He's got a Tom Brady effect, and I know you're going to say that. I really fear for Wales when he goes. I think the leadership, the second row unit, the pack, I really do think that's
I've never feared for Wales, to be honest.
it does make a lot of sense. What he offers, it's like Mike Brearley, to coin the English cricket reference. It's around like captaining itself and leadership is a incredible skill. And whilst I've been very honest about my assessment of Alan Wynne-Jones previously, I don't think he is a great rugby player. I don't think we would remember Alan Jones for his the great things he does at lock. I think that if Alan Wynne-Jones is South African, would he have had, would he have got in the team over the likes of Botha and, who was the other guy?
Matfield.
Victor Matfield. Would he have got in the New Zealand team over Ritalik? I know it, and it's ifs and buts, but
he doesn't get 150 caps.
He doesn't get 150
any
caps.
Any other tier one nation apart from Scotland.
Well, I do. Probably not even, not Ireland, I wouldn't have thought, over sort of O'Connell and Ryan. I mean, he's better than Devon Toner. We'll give him a little bit of credit. He's just not as tall. So as far as the position goes, but what you cannot argue with is his leadership ability and his ability to get the best out of other players, which I suppose it is absolutely a skill in itself. And warrants his position in the side, and for that reason, I have finally come round to the fact that you know, I would not be upset if he was named Lions captain for whatever happens this summer.
He doesn't get in my team, I'll be honest.
As a player, he doesn't get in my team, but as a leader, galvanising people and bringing them together, I think he starts the test matches.
There should only be one captain of the Lions.
Is he quite a distinctive person? Yeah,
according to the Celtic nations, he shouldn't be picked because he gives away too many penalties.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Owen Farrell.
My thing is with that argument is, and I know people are going to go, "Oh, Martin Johnson wasn't captain of England." I think you've got to have captained your country. Times have changed since 1997. That's why you don't have an uncapped player in the squad anymore, like Will Greenwood.
Captaining the Lions is very different from captaining your country.
And it's
a point that I'll probably come on to later.
You've got to be in the team to be captain.
Yeah, but then also I think that you could be captain of the team like Alan Wynn and play because of what he offers as a leader. And it pains me to say that because there are at least five better second rows.
Oh. I think you're judging the athlete and not the player. And does that make sense?
No. As a second row forward, for the job that I expect a second row to do, I think that there are five better second rows than Alan Wynne-Jones.
But then now we're going to go down this rabbit hole of Moneyball and all of this stuff is like, what's the outcome?
Absolutely.
That's the answer, you know. My argument's very much, I guess, what you're saying is you need him in the team and you need him as captain to get the better outcome.
Correct. Because if he's not captain, then he's not in the team. Because he's not, you know, whilst he still is offering a leadership role, he is not the leader.
He's probably my midweek captain.
You're being so offensive tonight. Yeah. You're being offensive tonight because you've looked at the Premiership league table and you know I'm coming on.
No.
We're seven points above.
Okay. No, not at all. I literally could not give a shit about the Premiership this season.
We've skirted away from
nothing to do with Bristol.
Yeah, okay. We've skirted away from the game. Let's move on. Let's get back to that. Obviously, half-time, 17-all. France have lost Jalibert to HIA and subsequently had to go off. But, you know, they bought Untermack on, which isn't a bad replacement, is it? Dupont is doing his thing, although I thought Wales kept him largely quiet, a lot like England did. I thought that they dealt with him very well, other than the try, which was a phenomenal piece of skill by Doulin and Jalibert to put him in. I thought he was fairly quiet. What I want to talk about is obviously the way Wales then stepped on the gas early in that second half. Obviously, there was the Josh Adams try, which I found really infuriating. And whilst I thought Barnes and Pearce, on the whole, had a very good game officiating, there is no way Luke Pearce actually saw that ball grounded, because on every replay, it didn't show it grounded. So questioning and that TMO sort of interaction, Wayne Barnes wanted to say to Luke Pearce, he hasn't got that ball down there. There was no clear evidence that
you've got to compare this to the other one, though. And I think the thing happened here is a human error. I think Luke had it in the doubt of his mind. I should have given it Gareth Davies. I need to write that wrong here. Does anyone else think that he did that?
A little bit, but I also think that in that situation where you get there and you cannot see that ball grounded, you have, in my opinion, you have to say, I've got held up, no try on the field.
I agree.
To prove to me that it's a try, rather than I'm 99% sure it's a try, because there is no way he could have seen it grounded with the naked eye, because of all of the replays that we watched, not one person saw it grounded. So it has to be the right way around.
So I disagree in that the unwritten law is that the benefit of the doubt should go with the attacking side. But if he doesn't see it grounded, the question should be try yes or no. And then leave it entirely up to the TMO.
Okay,
leave
but,
it
entirely when was the last time? When was the last time you heard that try yes or no question?
It's changed.
It's always on field decision.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't do it anymore. The laws have changed, haven't they?
But you can tell.
You made a really important.
You can tell who wants to do it.
It's the same as the third umpire in the cricket for catches that are 70 yards away and the umpire's asked to give a soft signal. Well, how can you say the umpire's got a better view there than multiple cameras that are going to show it? There has to come a point where you go, the cameras are going to provide the best opportunity here, not the person. But saying that the person has to make a decision, you know what? I just want to agree with your initial statement that I think Pierce had an excellent game. He kept the game flowing. He put the nines under pressure to get the ball out quickly, which was good.
Yeah.
The scrums were clean. The rucks were clean. Yeah. Generally pretty happy with how that was refereed.
Here's a flippant officiating comment for you. How come the other teams get to have people like Wayne Barnes and Luke Pearce now officiating their games and we get stuck with fucking Reynal and Andrew Brace and all
because
these
we,
shit Pro 14... And French referees.
Because we can't have English referees refereeing
England
games.
I know.
And the English referees are the top of the game at the moment.
And also, Brace had a decent game against France. You know, I was being flippant.
I like Poit, I think, is a good referee. But the two younger French referees are so fussy.
Ray, I mean, we'll get on to England and Ireland in a bit. But Galzier and Reynard, I mean... Yeah, we'll talk about Reynal in a few minutes. we'll just keep running. Because I know Ryan, you've got to get on in a minute.
No, guys, I've got about 25 minutes. So I'm here for the long.
Let's talk about the red card incident then very quickly. What did you think? Absolutely. For me, red card, no question, no doubt, right? It's fine. It was reckless by Wilhelmser. It was poor, you know, and it deserved to be a red card. What I fundamentally disagree with is the absolute vilification that he has gouged Wyn Jones, because he's not gouged him in any way, shape or form. He's tried to drag him out and you can see his hand slip up and it's got him around the face and he's dragged him back. That is not an eye gouge for me. It's an outcome. It's unfortunate. It's a red card, but don't call it he's a dirty bastard because he gouged him. That's not true, is it?
France have a reputation though, don't they? Maybe unfairly.
I've played in France. It's perfectly fair. I've played a couple of matches.
Don't
in
they
France.
Testicle grab as well? That's the other trick.
Oh, pretty much anything's fair game as far as the French are concerned.
Oh my god!
But he's gone to clear the player out. He's gone past Wyn Jones, his hands behind him, and he's gone to grab whatever he can to pull him back. And his hands just happen to have ended up in the eye. It's reckless. It's dangerous. He's got a red card. He'll get a ban, a sensible ban. But he won't get like a whatever 40-odd week or whatever.
There's no malice or intention or, you know, he's not gone to gouge. He's gone to clear him out and pull him out of the ruck. It's just so happened that that's where his hand has ended up. Do you see any differently, Ben?
No, I think it's a straight red. He had to go as soon as it was spotted. I think Brian Moore pretty much spotted it straight away. So it wasn't... it was pretty obvious, you know. It wasn't like hidden at the bottom of a ruck or anything like that. I think you're probably right. He wasn't going into that contact with the intention of gouging anyone. But I think Sam Warburton said it after the game. He'll have known he had his face and he should have just let go and he didn't. So I think he's, for that reason, he's got to go. And when he did go, I really thought that was game over.
100%. I don't think there is a person on this planet who thought, oh, I know, Wales now have had their customary red card for the opposition and they're now gonna not win this game. But like the way that France attacked during that period of play, that passage of play, was an indication of what's to come, because Wales had their warning. Obviously, then Falatau got his yellow card. Williams got his yellow card. France got over, and then it all kind of led to, you know, it was all, even after Olivon's try, it was still very much in Wales' hands, and they were running the clock down. And how often do you see when teams are doing that stupid, like, one out ruck thing, where they're kind of just getting it and flopping to the floor to try and waste the time? How often do you see referees almost feel like penalising them because it's such a shit way to waste time? Because you can give that flopping over your feet, flopping off their feet, pretty much any ruck, sealing off, you know, whatever. Because France weren't even in a position to contest most of those rucks to get the ball off them, because there were so many Wales bodies on top of them. He could have given that penalty. I think they probably did it 4 or 5 times before he actually gave it. And they were doing the same thing every time. So you've got to think, you either give it once, or you give it early, or not give it, because it was exactly the same scenario, just being replayed over and over again. And I thought once they gave that penalty away, the result was inevitable.
It's like a penalty in martial arts for passivity. It's they're giving it because the players are not making any active attempts to play positive rugby. You can pretty much guarantee if they do that and they're running forwards with it, that penalty doesn't get given very often. But if you just flop to the ground and three people flop on top of you, you're going to get pinged every time.
Well, you and you almost deserve to be, but as I say, once that is given, it was the writing was on the wall for Wales.
I think probably the fact that they were down to 13 had a big impact on that, because if you box kick that away with two of your cover down, then you're kind of asking for trouble with Dupont. Oh, Dupont had gone off by then, hadn't he? But you know, the French sort of counter attacking DNA.
Doulin, Pinot.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can do the single pass, charge it up, set up a ruck, and that's a perfectly sound tactic when you're up, when there's a couple of minutes to go, or even if you're level with a couple of minutes to go, you've just got to go up and then secure the ball.
I think a really good kick would have been enough, because Doulin had the butterfingers all game, didn't he?
Yeah.
But you know, it must have been very tempting just to try and play the clock out.
But your fullback's off though, isn't it? And if they do kick back, that's where the trouble is. So I think you raise a good point, 13. Look, I've done a Lawrence Dallaglio again, haven't I? Look, I hate this. We saw Bristol do it yesterday, and I didn't say that because I watched the whole game and I was thinking, oh God, here we go again. But teams do it. Munster did it for years. Ireland did it. All the great teams do it. Saracens do it. You know, I think you're right. That's the positivity.
And you've just got to be so clinical in your action, because you're giving the ref an option to ping you, aren't you?
Yeah.
And they weren't driving into the opposition. Like, they were literally getting it, and it's almost they're your own worst enemy at that point, because if your ball carrier is dropping straight away, there's almost nowhere for his support to go. So you've got nothing to drive over. So you're in a position where you're going forward, the player's dropping in front of you. At least if there is a contact, there is something to clear out and there is something to go up against. When you're setting up a ruck by passing it out and almost passively falling, you're not clearing anything out, which then means you're almost sealing off and just flopping over, as opposed to binding and driving off and through. But you know, like you say, it's a lot of teams do it.
It's shit and it's chronic hypoxia driven, but these players will drill rucks 150, 200 days a year. And not once will they drill a ruck where the ball carrier catches the ball and then drops to the ground straight away. It's all about you take the hit and then you drop.
Yeah, you're right. But a fantastic test match, all in all, and a great advert for rugby. I'm just absolutely delighted on a personal level that Wales didn't get a Grand Slam. So sorry about that. And it was great to see. Any more on Wales versus France before we move on?
Yeah, one name we haven't mentioned.
35 minutes.
One name we haven't mentioned who was an absolute legend all tournament, Josh Navidi.
Yeah.
Bonaparte.
No, Navidi has been class. And he's another one that's benefited from a bit of time away. He's had a lot of injuries, hasn't he? But like Ben mentioned, the Wales back row is phenomenal. It's mobile, it's strong, it's good over the ball, it carries hard. And it, you know, everybody's staking their claim. And they're all three of them will be in the Lions squad for the summer, whatever that looks like. I'm quite sure.
Back row is hardest thing to pick, I think, in that Lions squad.
100%. Yeah, 100%. But let's move on to a team that may not have many people in the Lions squad if it was based solely on the outcome of this Six Nations. Ireland versus England. Now, I want to start this off just by saying when that game finished on Saturday, I tweeted from the All Over account criticising England's performance, saying it was the worst performance of the tournament, only to be met by an Irish fan saying, well, you're not going to give Ireland any praise. Well, no, because I was talking about England and England's performance specifically. So just to be clear, you can be critical of one side and literally have a one-sided point of view. I wasn't criticizing Ireland. I actually said well done to them in another tweet. But if I'm talking about a specific subject, I don't have to balance that off by saying another team played well in that same tweet or in that same thread. And that was what the argument, like that was what this particular person was arguing. And I had to shut it down pretty quickly because it was really winding me up. Eddie Jones, Ben, said afterwards that England improved as the tournament went on. How England improved and still put in that performance against Ireland was beyond me. I can't fathom it. I don't understand it. Can you make any sense of it?
No. Yeah, it was bad. Well, the game started off actually quite well for England, but after 20 minutes, it just fell to pieces. And maybe your Irish friend is right to a certain degree in that Ireland played well and they probably outperformed England from 1 to 15, to be quite honest. But I don't think you can say England have improved at all. I mean, if you just stopped the tournament after the French game, then perhaps you could say that. But I'm not quite as anti-Eddie as the rest of you are. I wouldn't be gutted if he was sacked, but I also wouldn't be too upset if they kept him. I don't see too many sort of options to take over. But this tournament's been bad. The only sort of consolation is the last time they finished fifth, they won it the following year. So if that's the case, then
the only consolation is history says there might be some hope of getting better.
That's right. Yeah. I think.
So wait. Otherwise, Italy will beat them, and they'll get the wind spoon next year. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
They can't help themselves, can they? These Welshies.
He's got
to have a dig, isn't he?
Start off with Phil.
Yeah. I just think
he's not even really Welsh.
Are you the only Cornishman, Ben?
Yeah.
What do they call non-Cornish? Is it grommet or is it what?
No,
is it?
It's Emmets.
Emmets.
In polite circles.
Shorter words than impolite ones.
Yeah. It's not what they put on the bridge after last lockdown, was it?
No.
I think if you look at Eddie Jones's squad, a lot of people have a lot of complaints. And I think, actually, in terms of who should be in that isn't, I think Marcus Smith should definitely be in the squad. Yeah. Simmons should definitely be in the squad. I don't think Sam. But I don't think he should be starting eight. I've seen him start eight for England and it didn't end well. It didn't begin particularly well either. But I think as a bench option to come on at eight with 20 minutes to go or to come on at seven or six, I think he's absolutely perfect for the squad. Your other two back rowers that should be in have both been injured. So Willis and Underhill. In terms of centres, I'm not sure there's a huge amount knocking around that's not already in the squad. You could maybe argue Marchant.
Or injured.
Yeah, exactly. He's got his best two wingers out there. Fullback, of course, is a different option. But he wasn't going to play at fullback before this game started. So I would have been interested to see Daly start at 13 because he had some absolute howlers in that game, but he actually did a few bits very well. He just isn't a natural fullback and it's very difficult to play at fullback in any game, but in an international, especially if Sexton's already proved he's going to be sticking bombs up in the air with a pretty great regularity. I think that's the biggest... I can almost see his logic. He wants a sort of third fly half on the pitch, decision maker, but it just isn't working. And it's not doing the player any good. It's not doing the team any good. Personally, I think they should be looking at either De Glanville or Stewart or both and getting them in the squad.
If he wants that, though, Maylands is probably the only option you've got as a real second, like another 10 coming up from fullback. And he's been given one game and he didn't play well. But
I just think it's a flawed plan. Maylands, I thought he did all right at fullback, but he's another slash fullback. He's a fly half slash fullback. And I think that you want someone who plays there every week and has the positioning and the instincts. And I think that they'd be better off finding someone who can cope with a high ball and marshal their defence.
I worry. You mentioned the Glanville and Stewart there, Ben. I wonder whether there's a touch of the, let's say once bitten, twice shy with the whole rookie fullback. You know, they bought Furbank in this time last year, didn't they? For the Six Nations. And he'd been playing exceptionally for Northampton. Great under the high ball, counter-attack and all that sort of stuff. He played against France in that first test match. He had an absolute shit show. He played a couple of tests after that knee, and it wasn't great. And then we basically never saw him again. We haven't seen him again. And I think he's only just starting to recapture his form for Northampton because his confidence took a real knock. And I worry that, you know, an inexperienced player of De Glanville or Stewart could end up down the same route.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think Maylands was bad at all. So for this tournament, if he'd been fit, I'd have been quite happy with him playing at fullback. But I do think they need to start bringing these players in. I think, well, we know De Glanville was in an England squad because he managed to get himself sent home from it, didn't he? But you know, but as I say, I don't think it's doing Daly any good, as well as it's not doing the team any good. And going back to the original point, even the front five with Launchbury out and Laws out, then there's not a huge amount of options. I think Yules has done pretty well since he's come in. But something Doug would probably say, which I think is true, is they don't look like they're having a great deal of fun and they look like they want to go home.
Ian Boson said that, so, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
So if we... To me, the issue with Eddie Jones isn't selection, and I kind of agree with you on this, Ben. Although if we go back to the start of the tournament, Dougie, as he has since the World Cup, is clamouring for kind of wide-scale changes and bringing in other people who are going to be there for the 2023 World Cup. And your riposte to that, Ben, was that very much you just want to win games of rugby. Well, we've stuck with the same squad and we've lost games of rugby, so it's kind of backfired. That having been said, I do agree that actually the players that are in there are capable of putting in much better performances, like we saw in the France game, than what we've seen since, which means it's not the players, it's the system and it's the culture that's in place. Now, we're going up against Ireland, who have probably the most physical back row in the Northern Hemisphere, and sticking some solid centres in there as well. And we go back to that, we're going to charge it up the middle twice and then box kick technique. It was destined to failure. It doesn't matter who you've got there, unless you've got Tuilagi and Vakatawa as your two centres, it's not going to work. Unless you've got the South African number eight, what's his name?
Vermeulen.
It's not going to work. And with the semi-fit Billy Vunipola, because he hasn't put the dozen games under his belt that he needs, it's not going to work. Yet, how many times did we get the ball? And that's why, actually, I was much happier with the concept of a Lawrence Daly back line, because Lawrence can charge it up from 12, and then you've got that out ball to get it out to Daly and get it out the outside. How many times did we get outside their 12-13 channel? It pretty much never happened. True. And that's really what we should have been trying to do from fairly early on. So my biggest issue with Eddie is the fact that we keep reverting to a system that's been proven not to work, and the players have no freedom, and it has to be a cultural freedom thing, to adapt the way they play. Because when they're playing for their clubs, they do adapt the way they play according to the oppositions, or they respond to coaching information to adapt the way they play. They play like automatons. They play like they've got it programmed to play a certain way, and they don't have the ability to change that on the pitch. And for me, as long as Eddie's in charge, that's going to be the way that it goes. And the question shouldn't be, is there anybody out there who can do a better job than him? Because everybody could do a better job than him. Because the reality is, or at least as bad a job as him, because the reality is, you stick those players on the pitch and you give them no instructions, they're probably going to beat Italy. You stick them on the pitch and you give them no instructions, they're probably going to do a better job in some of the games. Well,
they'll work it out, so, because good players, the best players, have the ability to adapt to any situation that's put in.
Give me a grand a game and I'll manage them, and I just won't say a thing, and I'll just leave them to it.
I'll prove this wrong. So when Owen Farrell went off with HIA, it came out today that England had the ability to put George Ford back on, and Eddie Jones vetoed it and wanted Dan Robson at fly half for tactical reasons.
Yeah,
that for me is just madness.
It is madness.
Yeah, it's
flipping horseshit.
Yeah,
so that's why he's shit.
Yeah, so that's my point. It's radical Eddie doing things that is so Eddie-like. But my point around the players, if the players proved against France, a bit like, well, they proved against France that when you take the handbrake off and you give a slightly flexible game plan, because against France we kicked and we ran. It all, not in necessarily an equal measure, but we kicked and we ran, and there was a bit of balance. Against Scotland, we kicked far too much and offered no running threat. When you're not offering any running threat, it's very, very easy to defend a kick because you know it's coming. So you can be passive in defence. You don't have to rush defence because you don't have to put the pressure on because you know they're going to kick, which enables you to set up for that.
Yeah.
If you've got... Similarly, if you've got a team that isn't kicking and running everything from everywhere, you blitz from the outside and you shut down the run. All of a sudden, you force those mistakes. That's where if you're running a lot, that little chip in behind or whatever, the options chip in behind, is such a valuable weapon against a rush defence. But if you're doing either of those things exclusively, it's very easy to defend. Unless what you're doing is executed to the absolute nth degree. Now, if you're going to kick everything, It needs to be executed perfectly to a point that every single kick, box kick or bomb or whatever, is contestable. So you've got a chance of winning that ball back every time. You might not win it back every time, but you've got a chance either of gathering the kick or forcing the knock on. What England have lacked when they've employed this kicking tactic is any sort of decent execution. So similarly, when you run, unless you execute that run with slick hands, everybody's running their lines and giving the ball once drawing the man and passing, you're not going to go anywhere. So you have to execute.
So if we pick on three specific things that where England failed to learn both within games and between games, you've got, there was the kickoff where Itoje got lifted, caught the ball, and I think it was Tadhg Burn came round the other side. No maul formed, came round the other side. Itoje came down and pretty much gave him the ball. And that happened again at exactly the next kickoff. Now you've seen them do it once. Why do it again? You've got England persistently over the Six Nations have overcommitted for long balls at the line out. They stick a pod up at the back and just leave Curry sweeping out the back end. And they've been caught a couple of times with bits of quick hands. And I refuse to accept, as much as it may have been a training ground move for Keith Earls, I refuse to accept it went exactly as they wanted it to, because Curry very nearly ruined that for Keith Earls' try. But Ireland have obviously done their homework and gone, you know what, if we throw it over the top, throw it long, England are going to stick a pod up at the back and they've just got Tom Curry there. So if we have somebody running in that channel, they've got no defence against that. And we don't learn. We make the same mistakes again. And then you've got Billy Vunipola runs up the middle, gets held up, the whistle, it gets called a maul super quick and we lose the ball. So what does he do the next time? He runs in upright and gets caught again. What does George Ford do 5 minutes later? Runs in upright, gets caught again. Now, if the ref's going to blow super quick for that, you've got to be prepared to hit the deck as soon as there's any contact. They just don't learn.
No, and that's one of the things where I felt Reynal was unbelievably fussy. There were at least five occasions where England were penalised for doing something where an exact mirror image happened either a little bit later in the second half where Ireland did that was not given. And I said this earlier in the tournament, England, without coming across woe is me, because England didn't deserve anything. They didn't play well enough or they just didn't deserve anything. But England are almost being penalised out of games at times through their own indiscipline, but also some fussiness and failure to adapt to referees. And I think, you know, England were very good in Jones's early days of identifying where the lines were with the referees within the first 10, 15 minutes of games, and then taking it right to the line, over it, and then stepping back because they knew where it was. They seem to have spectacularly failed at that in this tournament. 67 penalties is the joint most of any team at any Six Nations tournament, which was only equaled by Italy during this tournament. And you expect Italy to give away a lot of penalties, considering the amount of pressure they find themselves under. England shouldn't be finding themselves under that much pressure to give away that many penalties. Cheers, Ryan. Thanks for coming, mate.
Cheers, guys. See you next time.
See you later.
Cheers, mate.
Can I just say, actually, I know we've spent a lot of time kind of talking about England and all of England's woes. Of the games that England have lost, I was actually most impressed with the way Ireland executed their game plan. I thought they obviously, it wasn't necessarily the most exciting game plan, but they knew what they wanted to do and they did it very well. The Irish back row played well. Henshaw is a hell of a player. I just think they did everything they needed to do really well and deserved to win that.
I think Henshaw would have a good shout to be player of the tournament, to be quite honest. I think he's been brilliant. I thought as well, Byrne has been really good all through the tournament and he's good again on Saturday. And Furlong demolished Genge and Makota, didn't he?
Yeah.
So you've got to give. I mean, I thought maybe England had more of a chance when Connors was pulled out, because I thought he was really good the week before. And to be honest, I thought we were the red card. I thought was harsh on Aki. Yeah. I mean, he did hit Vunipola in the head, and there was no suggestion that Vunipola made the most of it because he was knocked out cold. But Vunipola was very low, and Aki had got lower.
It was harsh, but it was within the letter of the laws as they currently stand.
Fuck the framework!
Yeah, ref, we hate the
ref,
framework.
Ref had no choice. The other thing, actually, that I thought about where England don't learn, very first scrum, Ireland do the oldest trick in the book and have a really passive hit, and England give away a free kick for an early push.
Straight in the referee's head. That is referee management 101.
Next two scrums, what happens? Ireland have a very passive hit and England get pinged for an early push. It's like schoolboy stuff.
And it was also pretty typical that Sexton and Murray chose to have their best games in about 3 years as well. I suppose that shows how well the Irish game planned it. Maybe Owen talks in his sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure he lives with Andy and his mum anymore, but...
No, they all live in a big rugby league house, don't they?
It's a mid-terrace in Wigan, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Andy's just up at night taking notes.
Yeah. Well, I will... I've lost my trail of thought there. I was going to say something. No, don't worry about it. I can't remember what it was, but very, very frustrating. And it'll be interesting to see where England go from here and what happens. I saw there was talk of a break clause in Eddie Jones's contract.
So, the RFU are looking into it, and Bill Sweeney had a meeting with Eddie today to talk about the future, and they're going to look into it and report early next week.
My outlook on that is probably the most sensible thing Eddie Jones has ever said as England manager was...
Oh, mate.
Mate. England have got to stick to their strengths. And he said if they try and play like the All Blacks, they're going to get beaten. And I think that's true. So I think some of the more sort of outlandish suggestions from Super Rugby might be pie in the sky. I think you've got to
totally.
Yeah, you've got to go like, what are the strengths of the English players, and that mostly includes beating people up.
Yeah.
Brendan Venter. There you go.
Talking of beating people up, did you see the very clipped up thing of Ellis Genge and Johnny Sexton that seems to have been blown out of all proportion by Ireland's fans? Have you seen the Beast has tweeted the video and says, his exact words are, this Ellis Genge dude needs to be dealt with properly. And Ellis Genge just quote tweeted it, replying, just says, I'll let him know.
Did you see the one in the Romania game?
No. I mean, I don't tend to watch too much.
It was again clipped up on Twitter, but obviously Lloyd's out there in Romania, isn't he? So I asked him if he'd seen it, but it's pretty bad. There's a guy it's one of those shots where you can see the guy's face sticking out of a ruck, and the guy just knees him in the face.
Oh, I did see that. It was Spain, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah,
I did see that.
But apparently, Spain lost the plot.
So we can all. I reckon the RFU investigation into Eddie Jones is going to come back and find that he needs an extension to his contract and a £250,000 pay rise. That's the kind of quality of leadership I think the RFU have.
It's just a bit of a shit show all around. And I think more than anything, as an England fan, over and above everything else, as an England fan, it's just so fucking disappointing that if you're going to write a tournament off, which you can't say England have done, but they could have achieved exactly what they've achieved in this tournament and picked a massively experimental squad, and everybody would have gone, ah, right, okay, well, I can see what you've done here. Look at, see what you're trying to achieve, and giving people a view of, you know, what's in the pipeline, giving people international experience. I mean, George Martin, for instance, and not in any way any sort of scapegoat, because it's not his fault, right? And
you know
he actually did okay.
I thought when he came on, he looked like he
wanted to get involved.
Right. It was 10 minutes, yeah, wasn't it? But he looked like he had more than a clue of what was going on. He looked like he was...
I mean, he's a professional rugby player, Ben. You would hope that is the case.
No.
And he's been with the squad for a little while, so, you know...
Sorry, I probably didn't put that in the right way. What I mean is, he almost looked like he belonged in a test match. He almost looked like he was organising other people, I think, is where I'm trying to come from.
Yeah,
here.
Okay.
He looks like that kid from the Colts that turns up and does a bit of first team training, gets
and then
drafted.
All of a sudden, yeah, and you go, Christ, he's good, he is. Yeah. Play a bit, this lad.
So, I just wanted to say that, but I think your point is going to be 100% correct. But as you said, it's not a knock on the kid at all. No. And actually, what he showed was pretty impressive.
Yeah, but like, is it likely? This is what I think about. Is it likely moving forward with everybody else's fit in a non-COVID secure bubble squad? Is he going to get picked? And the answer is probably no. So with that in mind, right, why not, you know, you've got, I don't understand the logic. I don't understand the reasoning. And then you lose Malins the day before the game. And you've obviously sent Odogwu back to his club without playing a minute of rugby for the last 8 weeks. And by Christ, Wasps have needed him. And you've just dragged him away for 8 weeks. You've not played him. And you just think, what the fuck's the point?
Yeah.
You know, I know we discussed last week, and I had a chat with Robbie Wibble about the system he's trying to impress, and, you know, what he's trying to do with regards to playing a system. But, you know, you lose your fullback, you put your centre of fullback, and then instead of doing anything else, you bring a back row onto the bench. So then you've got a two back replacement, and then you lose both your 10s, or you substitute your 10 and then you lose another one to HIA, and you put a 9 it scrum half. And it just, you know, it feels like Eddie's playing games. It feels like Eddie Jones is playing games with the England rugby squad, and he's the only one that's having fun with it.
He's an Australian, isn't he?
Yeah. But it's just frustrating.
Can we talk about the Lions?
Yeah,
because I've just written down my team.
Okay, let's go through a little bit of our Lions winners and losers, and pick a test match 15. We're probably not the only people to do this. I'm really in the, like, I drafted something the other day about the thing really annoys me, that is XXX or such and such has really hurt their Lions place. They won't get picked for the Lions. And I use Johnny May as an example. I mean, Johnny May probably won't get picked for the Lions because of this tournament, which is utter bullshit. Warren Gatland is not going to not pick Johnny May because England have had a shit Six Nations and Johnny May's hardly had any ball. He's not going to do that.
And the Lions, as much as any squad, is reliant on class, because you've got so many players to pick from, who are all good that you need to pick the ones with the most ability. You can't really look at form, especially because you're picking a squad way before any test match.
Yeah.
Sorry,
you go ahead, bud. No, you
the
go.
The other thing I would say is, as much as any squad, you kind of have to rely on past performances as well. So if someone has played well for the Lions before and has fitted into the squad before, then they're going to be in a better position for selection than a new kid that's just come off the block.
So, Russ, you said something about he's not there to decide whether people are good enough players or whatever, or something on the group. To me, actually, because the Lions is such a short kind of, or particularly this year, is likely to be such a short lead-in and such a short tournament, it's not about how good a player is or isn't. To me, it's about how adaptable a player is, and I think that's what he's looking for, is how do they respond when things don't go well. And in that regard, there's very few England players who've done themselves any favours.
Correct, but again, like, the Lions is not England.
And that's where
all the arguments about Owen Farrell, and, you know, we went to New Zealand 4 years ago with Sexton and Farrell playing 10 and 12, you know, and they were both very good over there. So it's those things that people forget really, yeah, really quickly and really easily. And it's not, and just because England's game plan isn't working currently, all of a sudden all of their players are shit. And that's not the case. So let's start from fullback. Let's do it the other way. Because everybody always starts it the front row. So let's start at fullback. Nobody else is going to pick anybody than Stuart Hogg, are they?
No.
I don't think that's as clear cut as you might think. But I do. I think at the moment you'd have to.
So it would be Hogg. It would be Hogg and Liam Williams, wouldn't it? Fighting it out. I don't think that there's any other option. So I mean, we could
as much as Liam Williams doesn't deserve the vitriol that he's got on Twitter after Saturday's performance. He has shown a bit of a hot-headed side of late, which I think might turn Gatland off a bit.
I think Gatland knows Liam Williams well enough.
Well, he probably does. But I mean, getting sent off and then lipping back to the ref, and then getting a yellow card, and is there a bit of a liability there that you don't get with Stuart Hogg?
So on that theme, I've got him on the wing.
You've got Liam Williams on the wing. That's interesting. Yeah. I think Rhys Samet will play. Now he'll play.
I've got the other Welshman. I've got Adams.
Adams doesn't do a lot for me.
He scores a lot of tries. He's like Chris Ashton. He just appears in play, and that's not an accident.
He actually reminds me of Cuthbert a little bit. He's a bit awkward looking, but does score tries. I've got Williams and Watson as my wingers.
I've got Adams and Watson and Van der Merwe as my kind of third option.
I don't think Van der Merwe's, I don't think he's done enough. I think when I look at Watson, May, I look at Rhys Samet and Adams, I don't think any of the Irish wingers get anywhere near it. So
not at the moment. I think Stockdale of 2 years ago does.
Yeah,
but
not at the moment.
But nice.
My pick is actually Watson and Rhys Samet at the moment. I just think the fact that the Rhys Samet's bulked up so much, and and he seems to have added an excellent kicking game, and he's quick and he's strong, and I mean, he's just an exceptional talent. So that's where I've gone with that. Centres,
I've gone for the Irish.
What, Ringrose and
Henshaw?
Okay.
I've got Henshaw and Davis.
I'm saying Henshaw and Davis too.
I got too many Welsh players to have Davis in as well.
I just think of a fit Jonathan Davis showing what he showed at the back end of this tournament with Henshaw is, I think that has got to be, it's got an O'Driscoll and sort of Roberts feel about it to me. Like that sort of partnership, although slightly different players, I think it's got that ability to work. And I think Henshaw has got the power run as well as the finesse. You know, like we talked about George North earlier and how he seems to have adapted to 13. Henshaw can do all of that with finesse. So that's why
I said earlier, I think Henshaw could easily be a player of the tournament. I think he's been brilliant, first to last. And you're absolutely right. Jonathan Davis is just pure class. He's done it for the Lions before, and his defence is going to be needed.
Against South Africa, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
10. Phil, you already gave yours away.
Yeah, bigger.
And I'm agreeing with you at the moment, especially against South Africa.
Yeah, and that's three of us. I'd have bigger in as well. Yeah.
Well, I think Sexton is starting to show some age-related marks. You know, good for age. He's a good for age car, isn't he?
He was showing age-related marks 4 years ago.
Yeah, but I think the way South Africa are probably going to set up to play, I think that Dan Bigger in that 10 channel potentially having Dielande running straight down his throat is a far better proposition for me. And I think his kicking game is completely on point. And I think as a leader in the back line, I think he's superb.
Russ, I thought that was a real clever link then.
What's that, mate?
I thought you were going to say with Sexton showing his age with that grey hair, I thought you were going to say a good pair of clippers would sort that out.
Well, you would have thought, wouldn't you?
So number 9.
I've got Muck DuPont.
Can't do that.
9 is a really interesting one.
It's, to me, 9's a weakness. Is a weakness of the Lions, and I've gone for Williams. But yeah, Ali Price blows hot and cold. Connor Murray is 49.
I think
Youngs is shit.
Yeah, I think if you could guarantee that Murray would play as well as he did on Saturday, which at one stage you could, I would pick him. But I've for now got Gareth Davis, but I think you're right. That I think 1 and 9 are the two that are really up for grabs. Yeah. I think that they're very difficult to pick.
Yeah, I agree. I'm struggling. I think one of the Welsh 9s, Davis or Williams, especially if Bigger's at 10. I would always look at potentially a combination at 9-10. Like obviously Murray and Sexton has worked so well in the past for the Lions, and I think if you're going to do that, it's one of those key combinations. Number 8,
Faletau
for me all day. There's no Faletau has to play in that back row, and I think the way that Billy is at the moment,
he's not going to get the game time in time.
No, and I think
of a high enough quality,
and I think that Faletau can do everything that Billy can, with more finesse again. And I think Faletau looks if he can stay fit for the remainder of the season for Bath, he really looks back to his best. The rest of the back row then is such a difficult position. I mean, you think you've got Tipperick and Navidi, you've got Watson, you've got Curry, you have got Underhill, you have got Ferguson.
I've got two Englishmen.
You've got Byrne, you've got Omani, you've got Van der Fleer, and you've got Connors, and you've got, I mean, the list is almost endless. Phil, you said you've got two Englishmen.
Yep,
I'm playing an Englishman and a Scotsman. Ben?
I've got an Englishman and a Scotsman as
so
well.
So I've gone Curry and Watson in a combination. I mean, it's almost left and right. I don't think it matters.
Well, I've gone Underhill and Watson.
I've gone Curry and Watson because Watson's from Manchester.
Hamish Watson has been absolutely phenomenal. And he, you know, every time I watch him play, he excites me. He carries hard. He tackles hard. He's over the ball. He's abrasive. He's aggressive. He looks like a proper, proper irritant and a horrible guy to play against.
To me, Curry, Watson, Faletau off the back of that Six Nations is a back row that almost picks itself with Tipperick or Navidi on the bench. But
what I've gone with is I think what Faletau allows you to do is almost pick any back row you want.
Yeah,
if you've got say Sam Simmons, you have to build that back row around him. And if you've got Billy, you for the opposite reason, you still need to build your back row around him. But with Faletau, he's good at everything. He's mobile, he's got good defence, he's got good hands, he reads the game well, and he carries well. So I think you can almost then pick your other two almost on the strengths of a ball carrier and a destroyer. And I've got Underhill there just to wreck things, and I've got Watson there to carry. But, you know, if Curry came in for either of them, I wouldn't be upset at all.
The only reason I haven't put Underhill is because I haven't seen him play for quite a long time.
Yeah, I suppose now he's back fit. I just think we'll have to see. But again, this is all on the proviso that people stay fit before the summer.
Of course.
There's always going to be injuries before the season's out. Along with the back row, I think lock is an incredible position to pick. Like, incredibly difficult. Obviously, James Ryan's missed out a lot of this tournament, but he's been very good recently. A surprise to me is how good Ian Henderson's been for Ireland. I think he's been excellent this tournament, but by far their standout, you know, as somebody who can play lock or six, is Tyke Byrne. He's been phenomenal. And Itoje has to play, but I think, you know, for me, I'm picking Alan Wynn and Itoje, and it pains me to say it.
Are we doing benches as well?
Well, we're kind of doing benches with all the added extra people we're putting
on. So I've got Alan Wynn and Itoje, and I've got Byrne on the bench, and I think it's really close. About, I think if it was not South Africa, I'd be thinking about Byrne, but they will have two absolute monsters in the second row, and then they'll bring two more off the bench. So I think
it would likely be like Mostert and Diego, wouldn't it? Snyman coming off the bench, or
so.
I've gone to Itoje and Byrne, and accept the fact you might give away a couple of scrum penalties with James Ryan on the bench.
Okay.
Fair enough. No Alan Wynn. And then,
I mean, how many scrums do you get in a game? 8 scrums on your putting. If you give away a couple of penalties, so be it. I think it's almost as important when playing South Africa to not try and play them at their game and to try and play them at your game.
You've just got to secure your own ball at your seven.
Yeah.
I mean, that should be the primary objective, shouldn't it? Like, it shouldn't be we want to turn the ball over a set piece. Your set piece should specifically be, we just need to secure our ball.
Scrums, it's about getting the ball back. It's not about a platform to attack from. And line out, Itoje, Byrne, Curry, you're going to do pretty well at a line out.
Yeah, agree. And then the front row, Hooker, let's start with Hooker. I mean, I'm picking Ken Owens.
Going with the Sheriff.
Yeah, Ben Owens for you.
No. I would have
and
one...
I hope you're picking LCD then.
I probably am, although I would still think about George because he's been there and done that. I think Hooker's actually quite difficult, but for a different reason to scrum half, in that you've got three really good options.
You discounting Herring?
Yeah, I think so. I think the two English hookers, you know, I think actually Cowan Dickey's been pretty good in this tournament. Line-out's been good. George is...
Did you, just to chase that, did you see Eddie Jones' interview said the line-out was 50-50 when Cowan Dickey was on the pit in the first half? Oh, the line-out was 50-50. It wasn't. England won every single line-out. Yeah.
I think it will be George, but I'm going to say Cowan Dickey.
I got Cowan Dickey on the bench and I could swap Owens and Cowan Dickey quite happily either way.
I would be more inclined to start with Ken Owens only because I know, you know, because of what he offers in security. And that's not to say Luke Cowan Dickey doesn't, but I also think bringing Cowan Dickey off the bench enables...
Against tired defence,
destructive, isn't he?
I think Owens has been excellent, don't get me wrong. And he really adds to that Welsh team. And something about him says he would be probably top three of the people you want on the tour for the bus.
and it's going to be a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and props. So Furlong is
for
one.
For the coach journey back from the Millennium to Celtic Manor.
Yeah.
So Furlong, loose head?
Yeah.
Tight head, yeah.
And who was backup? So I've gone with Francis, but I don't think there is a good option tight head backup.
I think off the bench, Sinclair.
Sinclair.
I wouldn't start him, but off the bench.
Not above Furlong, no.
No.
But off the bench, definitely.
Yeah. I've got Furlong. Wynn Jones has been excellent.
He's on my bench.
I think you have to start Mako.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a big Mako fan. But I just don't see... I don't see a crap Six Nations where he's got turned over more often than he's dominated and then playing a championship season as being very good preparation for playing against South Africa. I just don't see it. If he's playing regularly in the Premiership, I think you might be right. I've gone for the Ellis Genge.
No way.
No.
I'm sure he won't get picked, but I just think he adds something incredibly different to what the other props add. In a Joe Marler prick kind of way.
Here's something that's slightly controversial. I think Ellis Genge is quite a bit overrated. Everybody was talking about this, you know, this baby rhino, you know, look at what he does around the loose, look at how he does it. I haven't seen anything from Ellis Genge in the last 18 months that makes me think he is as good as everybody says he is.
But that's systems. It's because...
No, he's a prop forward, Phil.
Yeah, he's a prop forward who's done better in the scrums than Mako all Six Nations. We've been more secure with Genge at Loosehead than we have with Mako at Loosehead, all Six Nations. So he's better technically at that angle of it. But you play a scrum or you do a line out... First phase ball, your front row don't get there. They have no interest in getting there. They're hitting the second phase, if not the third phase, depending on how you're playing it. And we've done one phase and kicked the ball. It's not giving him the opportunity to do what he wants because he scrummages and then he gets up and he looks at the ball sailing over his head.
I'm a bit halfway between the both of you, to be honest. I think he's put in some incredible performances for Leicester and some of the England performances in the early days were great. I haven't really seen him kick on. And one thing that does worry me about him is he seems to get the ball ripped out quite a lot because he's really going for extra distance. And
he's very upright as well when he runs.
He's almost sort of trying too hard. I mean, if podcast favourite Joe Marler isn't around, I think he's worth his place in the England squad. But I think... I said earlier, sometimes you just got to trust class. And I think in this situation, that's where what you're doing with Mako. You're just going, okay,
also,
well.
And you could argue with that same thing with Kean Healy, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I'd rather have Kean Healy because he's more secure in the scrums than what Mako's been. Mako's got dominated by every tight head in the Six Nations.
Look, if Healy or Wyn Jones started, I wouldn't be disappointed. But I think, as an attacking weapon, Mako's the best of the three. I just said about the bench. Just all I was going to say is I think North has shown that he could be a really useful
Twenty. He could be a really useful 23, couldn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Cover wing or
the center. I would say also a good bench option is Russell, because if you are behind and you've got a chance, your arm, then have at it. Go on, have a license just to have a go.
My gut feel with Russell is that when he's in that kind of, you've got 20 minutes to try and fix things role, and this is based on very little other than kind of, yeah, gut feel, he always tries too hard then.
The Danny Cipriani effect.
Exactly. Yeah. You get the best out of him when you say, you're my number one, go and take control from the start kind of thing. But that's not what you want against South Africa. I've got Farrell in that role just because he gives a bit more flexibility. I mean, Gatland's shown that he doesn't mind playing two tens if needs be.
Yeah, I've got Byrne as the second row on the bench.
James Ryan. And Big as an 80-minute player quite often.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. I think if you're up, you just keep Bigger on, don't you?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, there's plenty of time yet. There are lots of Premiership and Pro 14 to be played. And
at least four of those players we've put in the starting 15 will be injured by the time.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Right, we've already wanked on for an hour and a half. Is there any Premiership chat you want to talk about, or is it all? I mean, it seems like a bit of a shit show now. Bath scoring six tries in the first half against Worcester. Now there's no relegation. It's all a bit of a moot point, isn't it?
Well, Premiership during Six Nations is always a bit scat up anyway, and then you throw in the fact there's no relegations and teams are just chucking in players to see what they're like and seeing if they can stick out a team of English Academy players so that they can tweet about it. But, I watched a bit of Premiership.
Agree. Meh. That's how I feel about Premiership. I'm back to that feeling of Premiership at the moment. Hopefully when the games get a bit more competitive, it might make a difference when the internationals come back. But, obviously, we've got the Scotland-France game on Friday night and the conclusion of the Six Nations Championship. I mean, hopefully now France go on and beat Scotland and win the tournament. That's what I hope.
That'd be lovely, wouldn't it?
Do either of you have any other business?
There was one thing that I was going to say before we get too far into any other business. Obviously, we've had some relatively exciting news as a podcast, with a little bit of freebies that we've alluded to along the way and a bit of discount code out there for our valuable listeners. And I just wondered whether we wanted to do a Manscaped Baldy of the Week.
A Manscaped Baldy of the Week. Absolutely. Yeah. A new regular feature.
I'd like to put Gail Fiku forwards for it.
I was going to say Keith Earls.
Well, I'll take the casting vote on this then, and based on his performances for the whole Six Nations, we're going to induct Gael Ficou into our Mall Over podcast, Manscaped sponsored Baldy of the Week. Because I think
that's fair enough, because he's been brilliant all tournament.
He has been brilliant. Yes, absolutely.
This is a feature that may struggle to run for 50 weeks.
Yes. Well, but look out for the voucher code, and you will hear an advert very soon if you've not heard it already. So that's where you can find it. And we'll have some other fairly exciting stuff coming up in the near future. So, yeah.
On a moving on to any other business point, I know Ben and I have spoke about this in one medium or another at some point during lockdown one, I believe. But as we're nearing the end of lockdown three, is it three? Lockdown seven? March the 359th or whatever it is.
Lockdown three, the lockening, isn't it?
Yeah. There is one local company who's helped me out a lot to get through this with working at home. So I want to put a big shout out to Tugboat Teas, based down in Truro. Loose leaf tea. Nice bit of masala chai in the morning. Kicks the day off lovely.
Hey, Phil, you're a monster. You're an absolute monster. Tea in the morning. Coffee.
I mean,
Tugboat for all of your coffee needs.
Is there a more middle class thing than loose leaf tea? Unbelievable.
I've had three coffees by 9 o'clock usually.
Yeah, really loves a bit of raspberry and echinacea just before bedtime.
Oh, good.
Lovely stuff. Ben, anything from you? I've got to get off this tea chat.
Well, I think our local small business corner was such a
roaring success
that we should perhaps start plugging local places. So if anyone is ever down on holiday in Newquay, then make sure they get to Trevilly Farm Shop.
Ooh, nice.
Excellent pasties. can't talk highly enough about them.
Lovely stuff. Not my words. I haven't got anything this week. You know, I could go into a rant about certain people's Twitter accounts and lots of other things, but I'm not going to. So I'm going to end it there. You've got an hour and a half out of us, and that's more than enough for any podcast. So we'll be back next week to chat about some rugby. Hopefully the Lensman will be back. And we will see you all then. Go well.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.